Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Imagine walking into a crowded bar and never walking out. No trace, no witnesses, not a single frame of security footage showing you leaving. That's exactly what happened to Brian Schaefer, an ambitious med school student with everything to live for, who vanished without a trace in the middle of a bustling college town. Tonight, we're diving into one of the most mind-bending modern disappearances that still haunts the internet to this day. This is the case and the disappearance of Brian Schaefer. Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets the macabre with your favorite deadly duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, the sinister, and the spooky. And I'm going to let you take a guess, Tom. Where do you think we might be going today for our case, for our episode? Or will I say?
Are we thinking destination? I need some type of contact clues.
Yeah, where do you think today's episode is going to be based out of?
Yeah, I know. So like destination, like... Am I thinking state?
Yeah, tell me a state. What state do you think we're going to be going to today? Or this episode is going to be based off of?
The last one was there. West Virginia.
West Virginia. Blue Ridge Mountain.
Anyways, am I right or not, woman?
No, you're not. I'll give you one more chance.
Florida.
No.
Alabama.
No.
Alaska.
No.
Arizona.
No.
Arkansas. At this point, I'm just going in alphabetical order.
No, you didn't get it right. We are actually heading to a place your family once called home. Columbus, Ohio. Ohio.
My family never actually lived in Ohio, but my grandparents and my cousins do.
Yeah, family.
Oh, I see what you're saying. They still call that home. Most of them.
But that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
It's a place your family once called home.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Columbus, Ohio. The only thing I know about Columbus, Ohio is this case and Jungle Gyms. That's all not Columbus, Ohio, but Ohio in general. That's all I know about Ohio is this case and Jungle Gyms.
Anyone that knows Jungle Gym is...
Oh, please add it to your
good taste.
Add it to your tourist destination. If you're doing a road trip, whatever the case is, you need to stop at Jungle Gyms. Tom took me there 100%. Recently. It's like Disney World, but the grocery
for
store.
Groceries?
Yes. It is so, it's like Epcot, but for groceries. That's literally
what
it is.
That's a really good way to explain
it. Yeah. And
no, it really is.
It's got so many interesting things left and right. It also kind of oddly reminds me of a childhood that we grew up in. You know what I mean?
I'm sorry, what?
Like they have a bunch of those characters from growing up. They've got
decorations. Now I know
what are you thinking?
Yes. I don't know. I thought you were meaning that the destination, the grocery store itself.
No. I'm talking about the decor.
All I was thinking was, what grocery store did you grow up going to that just reminds you that much?
No, it's pretty much an international grocery store. They also have, I think it was when we saw it was like 70 plus countries of like the type of foods
Wines,
that they carry.
Foods,
yeah. And it's so great. You can find anything of anything in there. You can even eat in there. You can hang out in there. You can get lost in there. You can buy groceries in there. You can buy home decor in there. You can even buy a 1977 Airbus seat plane in there. You remember?
Oh, yes.
Why are you looking at me like I'm crazy when you were there with me?
Okay. We both know that my memory is a lot worse than yours.
And they have like a bunch of toys. It feels like a childhood
that
growing up.
That section is newer though, because growing up, they never had that. That is honestly such a cool section.
It's so
filled
cool.
with board games. They also have a podcast studio.
They do have a podcast there, which no joke, around the time when I was planning on Macabre Mondays and creating it and it was coming into fruition and all that, that was actually one of my signs. We went to Jungle Gyms. Randomly walk in and I see, no joke, a podcast studio, and it's called Home of Jungle Gyms or something like that. It's like the podcast or whatnot. But that to me was also like a big sign at the time. I was like, my God, what am I doing? This was last year. Yeah. And I was like, and at this time I was feeling like, man, I should really, really go ahead with my podcast and do yeah. something like that. And just kind of make it actually make the dream actually come true. And here we are now. So yeah, Jungle Gyms was also another inspiration for me. If you guys heard a bunch of scratching and sniffings, bear with us here. We've got three dogs and they're rather active right now.
Yeah. And again, we're also kind of recording in a new area. So this is a new environment for us to kind of test some stuff out in. And
ooh, new area, you say, Tom. Yeah. What does that mean?
I don't know. I guess you guys will have to keep tuning in to figure that one out.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys have any ideas where we could be recording, why we would be recording in a different area, what that would even
maybe
mean.
The North Pole. That might be where God. We are.
Actually, maybe we're in Ohio right now. Who knows?
OH.
Ohio. Well, let me paint you the picture. Have you ever heard of Brian Schaefer?
No.
Nothing ever?
No.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. Okay. I'm excited to hear what your thoughts are.
Isn't this how every episode goes?
It does.
Every single one.
Yeah.
You've never heard of this person? No. Remember, which one of us is the one that's addicted to true crime?
Yeah. You. And I will say, for everybody listening, this was how our conversations always went without us recording. When I'm always be like, have you ever heard of this case? Have you ever heard of this person? Have you ever heard of this story? And he would always be like, no.
You would look at me like I was nuts.
Yeah. And but that's time. Why we started the podcast, because you love listening to me, JK.
I do love listening to you.
Yeah, but
because
after a
the
while.
Stories that you tell, one, keep me up at night. Mm, but
you're welcome.
They also do make me understand why you are a certain way you are about aww. Safety and everything else.
I'm special. It was Friday, March 31st of 2006 in Columbus, Ohio. Spring break was just beginning for students at Ohio State University, a time for relief and much needed fun after intense exams. Among them was Brian Schaefer, a bright and promising 27-year-old medical student.
Oh, okay.
He was born February 25th in 1979 in Pickerington, Ohio. And he was one out of two siblings. Have you ever heard of that place or been around?
No, there? But Ohio's got a lot of those weird little city town things.
Pickerington. I love it. Well, by all accounts, Brian was a guy who had a lot going for him. Okay. He was described as a smart, handsome, responsible, and very well liked. He'd had already earned an undergraduate degree from OSU and was deep into his second year of medical school. He loved music. Pearl Jam, to be exact, was his favorite.
Ooh, we like this
guy. I know.
Guy.
Yellow Ledbetter, I can't help it. And he even had dreams of maybe starting his own band someday, playing relaxed tropical style tunes. He even wanted to own an island at one point and listen to Jimmy Buffett all day while drinking margaritas, you know.
I won't lie. The minute you said tropical music, I immediately was thinking in my head, oh, so he wants to be similar to Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, searching for his lost shaker and salt, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, so simple guy. I mean, we've all got a
we
common...
We all want that.
I know, I'm like, we all have a common goal here. I like this guy. Okay. Now, Brian was deeply in love at this time. He was in a serious relationship with fellow med student Alexis Wagoner.
Okay.
They had big plans, specifically a trip to Miami to kick off spring break that his mom actually gifted them. Friends and family later revealed that Brian had actually confided in them that he was planning to propose to Alexis during their Miami trip.
Aw.
I know, super cute. His family and friends believed that they were such a great couple, and they all supported their relationship. They really liked her. They thought, you know, they make a cute couple. They're great for each other. Plus, they're both medical students. If anybody doesn't know, if you're gonna be dating a doctor or something, we got long hours. A medical student, it's not easy. Okay.
And it's not just you're not committing to once you finish school, then everything's done.
Right.
Because there, as we've been even learning, there's so much that goes into all
this. Right, right. But sadly, just 3 weeks earlier, before break, on March 6th of 2006, his mother, Renee, had tragically passed away after battling cancer.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Understandably, Brian and his family were grieving. His friend said that he was trying to stay positive, but his mom was one of the most important people in his life. So it just
same.
Imagine, right,
same
here. So imagine how he must have been feeling. I did read accounts, though, of him being absolutely devastated and even told Alexis at one point to run away with him. And it was reported that he had broken up with Alexis at one point because he was in a really dark place. But she refused, knowing that it was mainly his grief speaking, which valid.
Makes sense.
Right. And they were still planning to go to Miami together, even though that incident had occurred. And I will say, how he is feeling is obviously completely valid, because grief doesn't look the same on everyone. And also, grief can look happy at times and then switch and then sad again. Friday night, March 31st, he had dinner with his dad, Randy, to mark the end of the school term and finishing his finals. Randy later recalled Brian seemed exhausted from studying, but was looking forward to a much needed break. And knowing what we know now about med school, because, you know, my brother is in med school, your brother-in-law, and it's no joke, nonstop studying and tests back to back. I mean,
long,
I don't even...
Long, long hours.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. I would be... He's always, like, drained.
I was going to say, anytime we call him, he's always at the school studying.
He is, and he's there from morning to night practically every day, no joke. That's what I'm saying. Like, anybody who's going to date a doctor or a medical student,
there's a lot that comes with
it. It's a commitment. Yeah, it's a commitment. It's not just what people think. It's like, oh, Grey's Anatomy, just make your money and, you know, come cure...
I mean, honestly, it's kind of the same thing as dating a podcast host. Long hours, editing while you're in bed, constantly working.
Yeah, because and then working with clients on the side. Yeah, it's true. I know. Sorry. Well, there's a little bit more flex with me, though.
Like, a little bit more.
There are no patients that are waiting for me to heal them or aren't dying or
and
whatever.
And even you're not in school, too, so you don't have to worry about a test or anything like
that's
that.
That's true.
That could literally make it or break your career.
That's true. And exactly. Like, so I wouldn't even be able to do it. So...
Let
kudos
alone
to him.
With losing your mother.
For real. Exactly. Right. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, imagine what he must have been feeling. Like, the relief that he finished his finals and he's done with that. But the sadness from his mother passing away just within that last month.
Yeah.
You know, he...
Because I feel like at that point, he finally can probably have that time to fully process everything that he just went through.
Right. And again... Grief can last a long time. You know, we don't, you know, it's, I can't even imagine, honestly. After dinner with his dad on March 31st of 2006, Brian's night began around 9 p.m. He met up with a friend, William Florence, who we always will reference as Clint because that's kind of the nickname he goes by, at a popular spot near campus called the Ugly Tuna Saluna. I love how,
We're very quirky with naming our bars in the Midwest.
Clearly. Well, it was located on the second floor of the South Campus Gateway Complex, which is like an outdoor mall or like lifestyle center near the Ohio State. It's got shops, restaurants, some apartments. I mean, it could have apartments, but it's got different levels to it, right? Pretty much a very buzzing place, especially on a Friday night kicking off spring break in a college town, so you can imagine. So the plan was to do a bar crawl, okay? One shot at every bar in Columbus University District, starting at the Ugly Tuna Saluna, and then work their way through to the Arena District. Brian actually called his brother that night, Derek, to ask him and his girlfriend to join him at the Ugly Tuna Saluna. I can't help but... Instead of me saying the
it's
bar,
funny.
I know, I'm like, Ugly Tuna Saluna, after the comedy show that his brother and his girlfriend were attending, but the show ended up running really late and they were kind of tired. So they never ended up meeting up with Brian later that night. So around 10 p.m., Brian called Alexis, who was visiting her family at the time in Toledo before their trip. It was a brief call, you know, just checking in, confirming, you know, hey, we're meeting for our flight on Monday. They're still going to Miami, and also telling her that he loved her. It was suspected that he was still planning on proposing to Alexis in Miami. So plans are still staying the same.
Yeah, nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed. He's still going to Miami. He's going to propose to her, even though his mother passed away. You know, he finishes finals, all that. Now, and I'm only mentioning that because that's important. But Alexis even stated in a People article saying, when I talked to him, he said, this is my chance to talk about you with the guys. And I love you. And I will see you in just a couple days.
Okay.
Super sweet, right? Checking in. Later that night, they're bar crawling, enjoying their night. And after midnight, as Friday turned into Saturday, now it's April 1st, Brian and Clint met up with another friend, Meredith Reed, to join into on the bar crawling, right?
Okay.
Have some fun.
Yeah.
So she gave them a ride back to where the night started, where the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
I love you.
For their last round. Okay. So they're like, let's just go back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna. Let's just end the night there or whatnot. And she's joining in. Later that night, now, this is where things get crucial. Okay. Bear with me. I know we're drinking some wine while we're recording this episode.
Hit me.
But you got this.
I'm zeroed in.
You are zeroed in. Now, this is where things get crucial. Security cameras, the CCTV footage is key to this case.
Okay.
At approximately 1:15 a.m. on April 1st, right? They were off Friday night. Now it's Saturday morning because it's 1:15 a.m.
Yeah.
Footage clearly shows Brian, Clint, and Meredith riding the escalator up to the bar's second floor entrance.
Okay.
Now, the Ugly Tuna Saluna wasn't on the ground floor, okay? It was perched up on the second level, and in order to get there, there's only one way in and one way out, the main way. The way everyone, including Brian, was using, which was the escalator up from the ground level plaza. Inside the bar, you can imagine, absolutely crowded. I mean, like I said, Friday night, college town, spring break is about to hit. People are done with their finals. Yeah, it's packed.
And OSU is a massive college.
Yeah, massive. So you can imagine how crowded it must be at this bar. So Brian reportedly was actually kind of separated from Clint and Meredith at times, which, again, isn't completely unusual being in such a crowded bar.
100% makes sense.
Yeah. And I feel like there's times I've been bar crawling or even just at bars in general with friends. And sometimes I'm like, where's Tony? And then randomly, Tony's like two people away from me. But in reality, he's actually like across the other room. You know, you just don't. Yes. It's just people kind of get lost to each other. Now, what happened next is pieced together from limited footage and witness accounts. Around 1:55 a.m., just minutes before the bar's 2 a.m. closing time, security footage outside the Ugly Tuna Saluna captures Brian. He's seen standing near the top escalator, chatting briefly with two young women he met at the bar. He then walks momentarily off the camera, reappears. It seems like he's saying goodbye. He turns and then seems to head right back towards the bar's entranceway, which is still on that second floor landing.
Okay.
So the footage that I have on the slide, which, again, everybody, I will post everything on our socials. So if you want to know what we're talking about, please go ahead over there. I always love to show images so you guys have an idea of what we're talking about. So in that video, you can actually see him kind of like moving back and forth. It's blurry. Yeah. But again, I mean, they've been drinking. It's been a couple hours. I don't see anything odd with it. I just see him.
It just looks like he's saying goodbye to friends.
Yeah, he's like talking to people. He's just like moving.
Have
he's
a good not, night.
Yeah, he's, yeah. And then he literally just is off the camera. You don't see him in the point of view anymore. That's it. After that.
What?
We never see Brian again. That footage that you're watching right now is the last known footage that we have of Brian.
And there's no cameras outside.
We'll get into it.
Oh.
Now, that brief image, walking towards the bar entrance around 1:55 a.m. on April 1st of 2006, is the last known sighting of Brian Schaefer. When the bar closed at 2 a.m., which, think about this, was only 5 minutes. Okay, 1:55, the camera catches him outside speaking to the two women, and then he briefly steps off and he goes back, what it looks like he's going back to the bar.
Okay.
Now, when the bar closed at 2 a.m., Clint and Meredith waited for Brian near the escalator, but he never showed up. They tried calling his cell phone and it went straight to voicemail. They looked around for him.
That's weird.
I know. They looked around for him, but there was no sign of him at all, figuring that he might have just walked back to his apartment without telling them. And his apartment was only 6 blocks away from the bar. So they were like, might not be too uncommon, right? So they ended up leaving without him.
Okay.
Now, to me, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I get that. I'm like, okay, he doesn't live that far away.
Well, yeah. And as a guy going to the bar with your friends, sometimes your friends disappear.
Yeah, maybe he did an Irish exit. Yeah. You know? Yeah. But there are reports that allegedly Brian and Clint got into a verbal argument. No one knows about what or what caused it. So it really could be nothing. But it's just something I have to mention because you'll see as we go on. Because other than it being a crowded bar that night, That could also be why maybe Brian separated from Clint and Meredith that night. They get into an argument. I can kind of see him being like,
"He wanted to have fun. Let me distance myself."
Exactly. Yeah, he's probably like, "Whatever. I don't even want to be around you right now." So I'm like, "Cool." Now, there are also initial reports focused on Brian seemingly generally that he's doing okay during the night. But one of the investigators involved, Sergeant John Hurst, later claimed on a podcast that he was on that Brian and Clint may have had a verbal argument inside the bar sometime before Brian disappeared. Meredith stated that she couldn't hear what was going on or knew what was happening, but that they looked visibly upset at one point in the night.
Okay.
So we don't really know much about it.
Yeah.
We don't. Now, Alexis had actually called Brian several times that weekend, but Brian never picked up any of her calls.
And was she called after they were done with the bar?
Yeah. So remember he called her and he was like, I can't wait to talk to the guys about you and I love you and I'll see you Monday, right? We're going to meet up.
And then nothing after that.
Nothing. So let's say it's the next day. It's Saturday now, right? It's a new day. Alexis had actually called him several times, but he did not pick up, which she thought at first she was like, he might be just sleeping off like a hangover. But after a couple hours and as the day went on, she thought that was really odd, which I would feel the same way.
Makes complete sense. Yeah.
Right.
I would find that weird too, especially if you have a strong relationship and somebody leaves you a message like that, that's the last thing they say to you is, can't wait to talk to you Monday. Or can't wait to see you tomorrow or something.
Yeah. And you don't hear from them and you have trips planned. Whatever. That's weird. a committed relationship. Like he's going to propose to her. So clearly they're in this other level in their relationship, right? So she thought that was kind of odd, which rightfully so, because I mean, I would feel the same way with you if I had called you and I'd be like, what the hell? He's not answering. That's really weird. So she actually called his dad. And so Randy, his dad, tried calling him, but no answer. Nothing. And so his dad decided to go over to his apartment, but nothing looked off or out of the ordinary. His bed was made. His medical books were still there. And even his car was still parked outside.
That's really weird, strange. Yeah.
Right. I know. I thought that was weird, too. By the following day. OK, now let's say they've been looking for him Saturday and Sunday. I have no idea where he's at. There's no phone call. Nothing really. It's telling us anything. Now, by the following day on Monday, it was his flight to Miami with Alexis, but he didn't show up to the airport.
Which is also strange because he was so excited. He was planning on proposing.
Right. Yeah, and they had really confirmed that they were still going to Miami on Monday, you know?
Yeah.
And you got to think about it, too. This is 2006. We don't got like phones how we do now. I can shoot you a text. That's not how things were back then.
It was the and because we had texting back then. But
it was like prepaid, I think.
Well, some was prepaid, but you also paid per. I want to say it was like per character.
No, I think it was per word or something. No, per message. It was per message.
Or something. Yeah.
Right. So you got to think about it. Nowadays, we're so like, oh, yeah, just text them. Right. Back then it was like
everyone takes unlimited call, text and calling for granted,
man, because we don't do that no more.
Kids these days don't know what we used to go through when our parents would say you went over on your minutes.
So by the following day, right, he doesn't show up to the airport. And at that point, with still no word from him, his dad, Randy, his brother, Derek, and his girlfriend, Alexis, officially reported him missing to the Columbus police because clearly Brian never made it home that night. Brian never made it home that night. And at the beginning, I'm like, okay, they didn't report him missing.
Yeah.
And I think his mom passed away. That's the last thing you think of. It is really odd. But
I feel like we've all had friends that have disappeared.
Yeah.
They've shut themselves out from everyone.
Right.
Nobody can get a hold of them.
Yep. Right. So I'm pretty sure that's kind of what they were thinking. But Monday, they were like, no, he didn't even show up. So this is odd.
That's weird.
An intensive search began immediately. Police, family, and volunteers scoured the area. They checked Brian's apartment. His car was still parked outside, like I said. Nothing seemed amiss. No signs of packing. No signs of planning to leave. Which you would think if he's going to go to Miami, there would be something, right? Something just moved or something. So clearly he didn't make it home that night. His wallet, his keys, his phone, though, now that it's off, were missing. His credit cards and passport were left behind. They searched dumpsters, sewers, homeless shelters, nearby construction sites, and the banks of the Olentangy River. Nothing. He's like nowhere to be found. There's no trace. Just gone into thin air. The investigation quickly focused on the Ugly Tuna Saluna and its security footage. Here lies the central maddening piece of the puzzle of this case. The bar, the Ugly Tuna Saluna, had only one public entrance and exit. The one facing the escalator where Brian was last seen. You can see it in the slide.
Okay.
Now, police did pore over the camera footage. They can account for everyone going up and leaving, except for Brian.
It's very weird. I'm also looking, and do we know what's to the left of that entrance?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
He was seen entering at 1:15 a.m., seen briefly outside near the entrance at 1:55 a.m. in that video that you saw him talking to two ladies, but he was never seen leaving through the main exit. Investigators quickly determined there must be another way out besides the main public escalator, right? This was described as a service door. So that area that you're talking about to the left is where the service door is located. Not generally is this service door used by the public. It's mainly used for, you know,
deliveries and stuff.
Deliveries, yeah. People who work there, all that. Okay. So it's located relatively close to the main entrance area where Brian was last seen. So clearly, like you thought, that leads you to think he must have probably taken the service door exit and left. Okay. That would be the most obvious.
It has to be.
Right. Well, at the time of Brian's disappearance in April 2006, this service door reportedly opened into an area of the building that was under active construction. So this
interesting.
This construction zone in turn likely had its own path leading outside of the building. So obviously it's going to be completely bypassing the main public entrance, right?
Which probably usually no cameras.
Nothing. You have no idea what's going on because, again, it's like a detour, essentially.
And it's a construction zone.
It's a construction zone. Now, because the main public exit was covered by cameras that didn't show Brian leaving, this service door or construction exit became a major focus for investigators as a potential route that he might have taken to leave the bar unseen by cameras. Although it is considered a possible route, investigators also had challenges with this theory. Some reports mention that police believe the construction area would have been extremely difficult and hazardous to navigate, especially for someone potentially intoxicated, as Brian most likely was after a night of bar hopping. Because you got to think about it.
And they were taking shots at every bar.
Yeah, they're bar crawling. They're going from bar to bar. So imagine that. Now, police thoroughly investigated this possibility. This included searching the construction site itself, of course. According to Detective Jessica Cooper, as reported by E! News and People.com, they actually got cadaver dogs be brought in, but the dogs didn't find anything that detected Brian's scent.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It, nowhere, like in that construction area or anywhere else around the bar, which you would think maybe could have indicated maybe there was an injury or foul play there, because that's weird.
Yeah, that's really
nothing,
odd.
Nothing. Now, despite being the most plausible theoretical explanation for how Brian could have left the bar without being seen on the main exit camera, the investigation never found any concrete evidence confirming that he actually used the service door or what might have happened to him within the construction zone or immediately after exiting it.
Yeah.
Right, nothing. No witnesses reported seeing him emerge from that area either, and they even checked other nearby cameras, like stores or bars that were located on the exit side, but nothing picked them up either. Nothing.
That's really odd.
It's super strange. Now, police interviewed everyone that they could find. Bar staff, customers, Clint, Meredith, the two young women that Brian was speaking to outside of the bar that we see him in the video with. Alexis and Meredith cooperated fully, reportedly passing polygraph tests. But Clint, on the other hand, he was cooperating initially, but later declined to take a polygraph test on the advice of his lawyer. While this clearly, because you saw my face, I was raising my eyebrows, raises eyebrows. I see your face too. Police have stated that he was cleared early on and was not considered a suspect in the disappearance of Brian.
And to be fair, and I'm not saying this in Clint's defense, but you and I both know, because something that you've taught me from all the years of you walking me through all these things and also my background, polygraphs, while they can be helpful, there are ways that you can get a false positive.
You can, right? And just then, by being nervous, stressed, overthinking, you know, even if you are innocent, you could come out positive.
And not saying that the police were trying to do this.
Right.
But who's to say that all of a sudden Clint answers something? He's a little bit stressed, a little bit worried.
Right.
And then he answers something with the truth, but it shows as a false.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that goes to court.
His lawyer ended up coming out saying, you know, Clint has nothing to do with his disappearance. I told him that he shouldn't do the polygraph, which to me, I'm like, okay, that doesn't sound odd. You're either damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know, you do. And you know, clearly if he had nothing to do with it and it came out negative, cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
In my opinion, any good lawyer should tell you not to do a polygraph.
So clearly, I mean, that does raise suspicions because Meredith didn't get a lawyer, but Clint did. So that is odd.
Yeah.
But again, it's hard for me to just initially be like, Clint did this. I knew it. You know, like just hard because again, I feel like it's something that people would do. And again, if people knew that he did get into an argument with him, initially people are obviously going to immediately think Clint had something to do with this.
Okay? Exactly. And I think that's where my head also was going is right. No one else that night got in an argument with him, supposedly or allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
Besides Clint. So that also same thing. If I'm Clint and I know I got an argument with an argument with somebody the night they disappeared.
Yeah.
100% I'm also going to probably lawyer up in the sense of, hey, I didn't have anything to do with this.
But just to be
honest, I know eyes are going to be on me because of this, this, and this.
Right. And the thing is, too, that some of the information that I was finding when I was researching is that apparently they've gotten into, they were best friends. Okay. So that's kind of odd that you're not trying to help find your best friend. Two, apparently it wasn't uncommon for them to get into little spats or arguments or whatever. And so then it's also kind of like, this is a reoccurring thing. What are you guys even arguing about? What's going on? I don't know. But again, who knows, right? That's just, I couldn't find anything that 100% confirmed it, but that's one of the things I have to mention. Okay.
Okay.
Now, everyone who went inside the bar was accounted for except for Brian. And even if he did leave the bar and magically went through the blind spot of the camera in front of the bar, he would have been caught by other bars or shop security cameras that were around. At least some type of trace, but no. Like I said, just vanished. Okay.
Okay.
The following months, Randy, Derek, and Alexis didn't stop their search for him. Various tips came in saying that he was seen in Atlanta or Sweden, but nothing really concrete or with actual proof. Randy even hired a psychic to try to help him find more information on Brian, and he was told that he could be found near the river. Interesting.
That's weird.
Randy dedicated, no joke, every moment to finding his son, Brian. Pursuing leads, maintaining a website, printing out flyers. He was not giving hope. Like he was.
Any dad would.
Any parent would, for real. There were oddities with Brian's phone lead in this case. Okay. After initially always going straight to voicemail, the most significant and consistently mentioned report is that Brian's phone actually pinged a cell tower in Hillard, Ohio.
Okay.
Hillard is a Hillard is a suburb that's actually located about 14 miles northwest of Columbus and the Ugly Tuna Saluna. So now we're ways away.
Yeah.
This ping wasn't necessarily from right after he vanished. It's often connected to like an incident report by his girlfriend, Alexis. She had actually been calling his phone regularly since he disappeared. Then one night, several months later, often reported as it being like around September in 2006. So from April to September, a couple months later, the phone reportedly rang three times before going back to voicemail. When investigators looked into this with the cell tower, with the cell provider.
Interesting.
Which at the time was Singular. You remember that? I don't know if they're still out.
No, Singular is AT&T now.
Oh, look at that. Well, yeah. Well, at the time it was Singular. Yeah. And that's like almost 20 years ago now. So yeah.
God, we're old.
Well, the data showed the phone had connected or pinged, like they say, right, to the tower in Hillard, Ohio around this time. Now, it's often noted that the cell phone provider suggested the ringing itself might have been a technical glitch in their system. However, the ping itself represents kind of data showing that the phone connecting to that specific tower, right?
Because it had to ping off something.
Right. It had to have been on. It had to have done something.
If it's off, it can't do anything.
It can't do nothing. Right. Now, based on this ping information, police did conduct searches in the Hillard area, but unfortunately, these searches did not uncover any clues related to Brian's whereabouts or, you know, what might have happened to him or any type of sign of him even being there.
Yeah.
So it really could have just been a glitch. There are also other reports of his phone pinging in other areas, but nothing came of it.
Yeah. So nothing was really concrete with anything.
But I also find it weird because why is his phone pinging?
No, that is weird because...
Right?
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I don't know if it's the wine talking.
Well, I also think when you think back to phones at that time, phones also, the battery lasted a lot longer.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
I'm not even joking. I remember my Nokia that I had.
Well, that's true.
Long live Nokia. I would charge that phone.
Dude, it was like a brick.
No, well, yes.
Yeah.
I would charge that phone on a Monday and my Nokia wouldn't die until Wednesday, Thursday.
No, that's so true. Wait, now you're
because you
gotta
think you're only using it for texting and calls.
Let me see what kind of. Let me look it up real quick. What kind of brone? What kind of phone he had?
I don't know why, but I feel like since he is a med student, he's gonna have a BlackBerry.
Oh my God, you think so? There's no specific model of phone that he had that I could find. But anyways,
it was probably a Razor.
Okay. Well, clearly we don't have a... Let's get back to it because I was about to go on a spiral of like the sidekick. You remember that one?
The wine is talking.
I know it really is. Actually, let me refill real quick. Now, based on this ping information, police did conduct searches in the Hillard area. But unfortunately, these searches did not uncover any type of clues related to Brian's whereabouts or what might have happened to him. While the Hillard ping is the most concrete piece of location data reported... There's sometimes online discussions or speculation about whether the phone might have pinged other towers earlier or had shown other signs of intermittent activity within the first few weeks or month. However, the Hillard ping associated with the later ringing incident is the only most common cited in reliable summaries of the case. Okay.
Okay.
So, like I said before, there are other reports of apparently it pinging somewhere else, but nothing else concrete or anything that really led to it. Now, in May of 2006, a month and some change from when he was last seen, someone did break into his apartment.
Really?
Yeah, but it had nothing to do with his disappearance. It was just a robber, it seemed. I know.
Of
but
course.
Interesting,
such
right?
Such bad luck.
I know, for real. Now, 2 years after he did disappear, Crime Stoppers offered a $25,000 reward, but tragically, Brian's father, Randy Schaefer, who dedicated every moment to finding his son, died in a freak accident in 2008.
Really?
Yeah, he was struck by a falling tree branch during a windstorm on his way to work.
Damn.
I know, which...
That sucks.
Freak accident, because that's insane. In the span of 2 years, Derek now has lost his mother, his brother's nowhere to be found, and his father, leaving Derek the only one left in his family, which... Horrible.
I can't imagine being in that position.
I know, I can't either. Days after Randy died, the Columbus Dispatch, which is their daily newspaper that has been serving Columbus, Ohio and Central Ohio since 1871, they posted an obituary for him on the website. On there, you can leave tributes and kind of like comments and whatnot of anybody who knew him.
It sounds similar to like the Indianapolis Star.
Okay, cool. So they do the same thing. Okay. So on there, a lot of people who knew Randy, like friends and coworkers, they left their tributes. The reason why I'm mentioning this is because this is another piece of the case that there was one tribute that stood out specifically because apparently it was from Brian. And it read,
really?
Yeah, it read, "Dad, I love you. Love, Brian." And the message said that it was coming from the U.S. Virgin Islands.
What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to be pulling a prank. I just...
And you remember it was a goal of Brian's that he wanted to start a band and own an island and live the Jimmy Buffett life. So odd, right?
I'm assuming we'll get into it. Did they investigate this?
Good question. Because the investigation actually traced the source of the online comments, of course. And it was determined that the message did not originate from the U.S. Virgin Islands.
So like it was a troll.
It's that it stated. Yeah. Instead, it was actually traced back to a public computer located in Franklin County, Ohio. Mm-hmm.
Let me guess. Public library?
It was a public library, correct. So, yeah, just some freaking asshole thinking that it's funny to... Well, again, that we think of, it could be that is just doing that just to be all shit and giggles.
Yeah.
Because the message came from a local public computer and not from the location indicated in the message itself, investigators concluded that, of course, the comment was just a cruel hoax of somebody being a complete asshole.
Yeah.
A side whack, an ass crack, a wipe of many wipes.
Anyways. Beep, just, beep, 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 beep.
Just stop doing that. Like, every time I search up a case, why are you guys doing that?
Because you have just same thing would happen in the fire department, and I think the police department deals with this. You have people that want to see action.
What the hell's so wrong with you?
So what they do is they try to stir up action. That's actually why there's certain arsonists, and the reason they become an arsonist is just strictly because they want to see the action.
I'm going to show you some action if you guys keep doing that shit, because I'm tired. I've worked like a dog day and night. What the hell are you guys doing? Like, I just don't understand. Baby, where is this coming from?
There's people that don't have any
type of attention, nothing better to do. My goodness, I'll give you something to do. How about you come over and edit my podcast episodes? There's things to be done. I'll show you. If you're bored, I got things for you to do.
Anyways,
jeez, sorry.
Reeled in.
Is talking a little, but my God, it just was pissing me off. My goodness, like another case that we covered, and you're gonna see because there's so many as we keep going on. I know I'm just introducing you to them, Tom, but man. Well, anyways, clearly.
Where were we?
Yeah, because of the public nature of the computer, identifying the specific individual who posted the message is unfortunately difficult and almost impossible to prove who it was.
Yep.
Right. So it was just a mass wipe. Now some updates to mention before we get into theories. Okay.
Okay. My favorite part.
Your favorite part. And because I love to hear your theories too after I tell you the whole case and the evidence that we have. Now, in 2018, the Ugly Tuna Saluna closed down, unfortunately.
Damn.
Yeah. And I know, because at one point I was like, man, I want to, like, we go by Ohio when we visit Indy.
We could always stop and just get a drink.
Right. And just kind of, and apparently till this day, it's still a very much talked about case in Ohio. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Also case. Around the bar and stuff like that as well. Yeah. So in 2020, a photo of a homeless man from Tijuana, Mexico started circulating because it looked like Brian, but when the FBI used facial recognition software, it didn't match. So
makes sense.
That's out of the equation. 15 years after Brian disappeared, the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation and the Columbus Division of Police released an age progression photo of how Brian would look at the age of 42. Now remember, he went missing at 27. So now that would make him 46 years old.
Yep.
Yeah, that was quick math.
Impressive.
Thank you.
I'm not even checking it right now in my own head.
It's true.
I'm too tired.
Just believe me. Now, as of February of 2020, there's an article from 614 Now explicitly states that Crime Stoppers of Central Ohio have actually upped the reward to $100,000 for any information that can help to solve this case.
It makes sense.
Yeah, because still there's no word.
He's been missing for so long.
Yeah, there's no word. And now that I've laid out the timeline, the strange circumstances that of Brian's disappearance, I want to dive into theories, okay? Because honestly, the deeper you go, the more questions you kind of come out with and a lot more theories that you have. And that's kind of exactly what makes this case such a cornerstone of internet sleuthing and late night Reddit rabbit holes, because I've been there. I just want to start with a theory that's probably crossed everybody's mind that's listening right now. Theory one, he might have left on his own. You know, some believe that Brian, you know, walked away from his life. Maybe it was the grief of losing his mom. Maybe med school was too much, which I could kind of, I could believe all that, right? Because sometimes when we talk to my brother, he's so stressed out that he probably wishes he was not doing the things he's doing right now, right? Because it's a lot. So, you know, maybe he wanted to start over somewhere. Clean slate. People pointed out that he had talked with his girlfriend about doing like a tropical getaway and that he was a big fan of Jimmy Buffett, that there's even speculation he might have run off to a beach somewhere and pulled a full Margaritaville vanishing act, right? But I don't know. The logistics just don't quite line up for me. He didn't take his passport. He left his car behind. His credit cards were untouched. His cell phone's still there. And he had plans, literally a whole trip with Alexis and, you know, graduation coming up. Like
you're just about to the finish line at this point.
Right. You're almost there. So, and he was reportedly so close to his family and excited about his future. So even with all that being said, if he left, he did it without leaving an absolute single trace. Like this man pulled a DB Cooper. Right. And in today's world, it would probably be absolutely impossible. 2006, I could maybe see it.
I was going to say 06.
Yeah, I could maybe see it. I could let that slide. But I also just don't see it. And there are interviews with Alexis where she said that he's just, what, like, if he did do that, it just doesn't sound right. He just was not that guy. was just not that guy. And
yeah,
I mean, she would have also known him best. Like his family and her would have known him best.
Yeah, totally agree.
So that's theory one. Now, theory two is that he never left the bar. Okay, here's where it gets a little weird. Because surveillance footage from the Ugly Tuna Saluna shows Brian entering the bar around 1:15 a.m., like I said. But there's no footage of him ever leaving. The only known exit was under video surveillance. The cameras caught his friends leaving. They caught random customers leaving, but Brian never. Some speculate that he might have changed clothes, disguised himself, or slipped out of a back exit. Except there wasn't a usable exit open to the public, essentially, right? Because there was a construction zone.
Yeah.
Others think that he might have gone into that public, into that exit, into the construction area, and maybe fallen victim to like an accident or foul play, with his body somehow being missed by authorities. Some people have even speculated that maybe he fell into the concrete. Maybe he fell into, I mean, if it's a construction as an exit, anything and everything could be possible, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
You can fall and disappear and all that. That's what some people theorize. But multiple searches, when the police went in, they had thought that in mind as well. You got to keep in mind, nobody saw nothing. Yeah. Okay.
And they also sent the cadaver dogs.
There's no like scent traces or anything. But again, I mean, it could be me because in my head, I'm thinking of construction exits. Like, where would I have left any type of scent? But again, I don't know. I'm not a dog, so I don't know how they, I don't know how they go about the logic there.
Well, the only thing I thought of was if he went out a construction exit or if foul play happened and he was aggressively taken out through a construction exit, wet concrete,
right?
Something not cured,
something, yeah,
you know.
But my thing is, I just find it with this theory, I just find it interesting that no cameras caught anything of anything outside, even on that side. And the if you think about it, the Ugly Tuna Saluna main exit is in the front, obviously, and then pretty much this construction exit, you're going through a whole back building to exit out. So I don't, I just don't, and
it
also,
doesn't add up.
I don't know. It's just weird. I don't know.
It's a solid theory.
Right.
But
it's a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't know what he, I mean, if you think about it, it could be a coincidence. He could have just magically slipped out of the camera. It could have just been like that 1/1,000,000th moment that he could have actually slipped out without being caught. You know, what a coincidence.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it could have just been one of those.
It just so happens that he hit a certain area where
the blind
wasn't
spot.
Seen.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that could
that
be.
That makes sense.
That could be a theory, right? Now, theory three is foul play by someone else. Some have actually turned an eye to the people that he was with that night. His friend Clint, who was with him at the bar, right? Reportedly lawyered up and refused to take a polygraph test. Suspicious, maybe. Or maybe just a smart legal advice like we talked. Still, his refusal to cooperate more openly raised eyebrows and obviously is going to be fueling speculation. Clearly, here we are speculating. Could someone have gotten into an argument with Brian? Could something have happened in a split second, covered up before anybody noticed? Brian's dad, Randy, publicly urged Clint at the time to come forward with any information. But that lead has gone cold and Clint has never been charged with anything or has never changed his story in reality. And there's actual interviews with Derek, Brian's brother, that has stated he feels like something must have happened that night. Some people have even speculated online that maybe the argument that he did get in with Clint was maybe Brian saying, hey, I am leaving tonight. I'm just going to disappear. And maybe that's what started an argument or I don't know. Speculation, right? But those are the thoughts. Now, theory four is a random act of violence, or maybe he was abducted. Columbus isn't exactly known for high crime, especially in that area where the bar was located. But if you think bars, booze, and late night crowds, yeah, I don't know, can bring out the danger in people and the situations. So some theorists believe that Brian may have stepped out briefly and been targeted by someone, whether a random attacker or something more organized. But still, there's a lot of lack of physical evidence, no signs of a struggle. Honestly, the sheer lack of any clues makes this theory as frustrating as the others. I did read online that some people reported that the two women that he was speaking to said that he actually went to the local gas station that was there. But again, he wasn't picked up on any cameras and that some people saw him getting in a car. But again, nothing concrete or anything that really leads to some full real evidence. Again, speculation. Now, theory five, the last theory.
Okay.
This theory f***ed me up, okay? Because I remember when I was looking into this case, I remember hearing about this case a couple years ago. When I started looking into it, I'm like, why does this sound semi-familiar to something I've heard in another case?
Do tell.
Have you ever heard of the Smiley Face Killer?
Yes.
Okay.
And I won't lie, I was actually getting...
Really?
So the theory I had, I'm glad we're covering this.
Uh-huh.
The theory I had...
Not me was smiling.
What, like, was what crimes, serial crimes, mm-hmm. were happening around this time.
Mm-hmm.
Because if all of his friends leave, somebody in the bar, Smiley Face Killer, uh-huh. potentially, is watching...
Targeting.
Sees, oh, argument happens. He's not leaving with the rest of the group. Oh, watching him continuously through the night. He'd have said goodbye to the last group of people he was with. The minute he exits or the minute he comes to this area, I know there's a blind spot. I can snatch him.
Damn.
And never be seen again.
Maybe he ended up leaving on his own. Like Brian did leave on his own accord because they got into an argument. Then it just so happened to work out. So now here's the thing. Here's where we dip into darker waters, okay? Some internet sleuths and independent investigators have linked Brian's case to the Smiley Face Killer theory. Clearly, Tom has heard of it. If you guys haven't heard of it, just strap in. I'm going to give you a small synopsis here. The theory suggests a network or serial killer or killers, really, are operating across multiple states. They actually target young, athletic, college-aged men. I'm going to say they or him or her. We don't know, okay?
Yeah, it's never been confirmed if it's group people or
Yeah, we don't know. They target young, athletic, college-aged men who vanish after a night out drinking, only to be found dead later, often in bodies of water, and often near spray-painted smiley face graffiti. Clearly, Brian fits this profile, okay? Male, college student, last seen at a bar, drinking, vanished without a trace. But, unlike many of the supposed smiley face killer victims, which we will cover this serial killer at one point on an episode, his body has never been found. Some think that makes him kind of like an early or maybe a failed attempt. Others argue that it just makes a theory weaker. You know, like it just doesn't fully fledge out.
I was going to say that would be where I would go is that it makes it a little bit weaker just because.
Right. It doesn't fit the full MO.
Exactly.
Yeah. But okay, we'll get into
somebody
those.
Like this or group people like this. Who knows? If it's a group, it could be the one person that tried joining the group that just. Did not do a good job and ended up messing up or didn't, you know.
Right, could have been a failed attempt or whatnot. Well, that's the thing. Like, a lot of the critics of the smiley face killer theory say that it's just pure conspiracy, you know, grasping at the coincidences and patterns that don't truly connect, which I've noted. I do know that that is a big thing. I mean, there's theories out here. A lot of people, honestly, there's couch detectives. There's been crimes that have been solved from people who are actually looking into this case. Not this case. Well, this case or other cases out there.
That provide some good theories. Again, as we've said this multiple times on the podcast, that is another reason we like doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Is because we want to get anyone that is missing, such as Brian, and many of the other cases we've already covered.
That are cold or we don't know any answers. Yeah.
We're hoping that it also helps spark somebody out there that maybe knows something or has heard something in passing and never made a connection. They hear this episode and then all of a sudden they think, oh, I actually know something that could be beneficial.
Well, just like the Golden State Killer, like we've mentioned it before. I mean, it was 30 years later, 30 plus years later, but hey, we found out who the killer was, right? So that idea, the idea of the smiley face killer theory, it still lingers because in cases like Brian's, it almost makes more sense than him vanishing from inside a bar with no exit. And so the truth is really every theory is going to have its holds. And after nearly two decades, there are still no answers, no confirmed sightings, no digital footprints, no physical evidence, just the heartbreaking silence in reality that, you know, they're. Could have been more answers, but we don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah, whether Brian was met with foul play, whether he ran away or became a victim of something more sinister, his case is one of the most haunting modern disappearances. I will forever wonder what truly happened to Brian Schaefer. And to be honest, people who disappear is so eerie. There are so many cases of people who just disappear into thin air, and it's just so eerie.
Lawrence Spears.
Yes. I'm just shocked. It really gives me...
It's haunting, too, because especially in modern day,
mm-hmm.
when you see people go missing, it almost is interesting because I feel like you hear it more often in busy suburban or urban areas such as city or something.
Cities, yeah.
Rather than that happening out in the rural area where there's no cameras.
Oh, just you wait, because we're going to start getting into it.
No, yeah. No, please don't.
Baby, the podcast just begun. We're like 16 episodes in.
Yeah, you're right.
There are thousands of countless voices that need to be shared with the world that don't have any type of light shed on them. So I don't know what you mean, though. I know what you mean by what you're saying, because it leaves you wondering, really.
Yeah.
What truly happened to him and all the others, and why.
So many.
Yeah, like, what the hell? It's just interesting. So Brian Schaefer's case is still a haunting reminder of how suddenly a life can change. He walked towards a bar entrance and he stepped into a mystery. He would have been 46 years old today, and the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation has released age-progressed photos of what he might look like now, which I will upload into our social media. So, you know, if you just somehow happen to find someone who looks like him, you never know. The Columbus Police Department considers this still an active and open missing investigation. If you have any type of information, no matter how small it may seem, regarding the disappearance of Brian Schaefer, please contact them or the local FBI. We are still hoping for answers and peace for Derek, so then he can also get some closure and figure out, you know, what happened. Thank you for joining us today on Macabre Mondays. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Tom, and we want to hear from you. Seriously, if you have a story that's strange, sinister, or downright spooky, doesn't matter how small you think it may be, please, please, please send it our way. You can email us at macabremondayspodcast@gmail.com or head over to macabremondays.com to submit your story. Yours just might be featured in an upcoming listener episode.
Follow us on social media by searching Macabre Mondays for photos of today's episode, updates, and a little extra spooky fun. We'll see you next Monday for another sinister, strange, and spooky episode. Stay tuned. More mysteries just around the corner. Until then, stay curious and stay safe, everyone. Bye.
Deuces.
Before we wrap up today's episode, we want to give a huge shout out to the sources that helped us bring Brian Schaefer's haunting disappearance to life. We pulled a detailed reporting from the Columbus Dispatch, The Lantern, and 10 TV News, along with timeline breakdowns from The Charlie Project and Name Us. We also referenced discussions and updates shared by Reddit's Unresolved Mysteries community and public records from FBI.gov, which still lists Brian as a missing person. Some key info came from People Magazine's special features on longstanding cold cases and covered by True Crime Daily. Plus, thanks to the independent sleuths and bloggers who've kept this case alive through forums, YouTube deep dives, and podcasts of their own, your curiosity helps keep the search for the truth alive. As always, we cite our sources not only out of respect, but because when it comes to cases like these, detail matters. And of course, we will always include all the source links in our show notes so you can go ahead and take a deep dive for yourself.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.